talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I hear you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. Welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Lynn Venhouse.
And we have been gone. We've taken a little hiatus for the past 3 weeks, but we are back.
Yes.
So I hope everybody who turned in on the radio to listen to our podcast the past couple weeks hasn't been too disappointed, hasn't worried about us.
I'm getting nothing but static on the radio, on the old Philco.
All right. We were kind of tied up. A lot of it had to do with the St. Louis International Film Festival and then some other things. But we're back with a vengeance. Oh. And we've got a lot to review, a whole bunch of movies to review. And we're going to talk about the top 10. And we'll talk a little bit about St. Louis International Film Festival and some stuff going on. But let's start with the top 12 in the box office.
Oh, my.
Number 12 was Tyler Perry's Boo Medea Halloween, which made 1.175.
It seems like it was just a couple of days ago it was number one. Boy, that's a that shot down as soon after the holiday.
I think last time we were on the air, it was number one.
Yeah.
Number 11, I should say, was Moonlight, which I did not see. Did you guys see Moonlight?
Yes, it's fantastic.
Okay. Yeah. It made $1.5 million. Shut In, which was a horror film that has Naomi Watts, which I didn't realize it opened.
And the kid from Room. Yeah. Jacob Tremblay.
And it was at a whopping 0% at the Rotten Tomatoes.
It was not screened for us.
No. Well, that goes without saying. Yeah,
it looks... It's $1.6 million in its opening. It did make the top 10, but...
opening week, really? Oh, yeah. My goodness. Okay.
The Accountant, still hanging in there, made $2.1 million. That was number 9. Number 8 opened... Bleed for this opened at number 8 with $2.3 million.
That's pretty dismal for an opening weekend, yeah.
Didn't look like the kind of movie that would make a lot of money.
Yeah.
What do I know? Number 7 was Edge of 17, which I don't think played in as many theaters.
Yeah,
It'll spread. Word of mouth will be good.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I actually saw it Friday night. It made 4.8. Number 6, Hacksaw Ridge. I loved Hacksaw Ridge. You see Hacksaw Ridge, man?
Yes, I did.
That's a fantastic movie. I think that's the best World War II movie in a long, long time.
Yes, it is.
I guess that's doing pretty good. It's at number 6 in its third week. It made $6.7 million.
Yeah.
Number 5 was Almost Christmas. I don't even know what that is.
That's Danny Glover.
Danny Glover, one of those big dysfunctional family things with an urban flavor.
Okay.
And I'll just say briefly, I had to review it. It's better than Love the Coopers from last year. That gets something. That came out of the
same.
Faint praise. That's because it's got a couple of standout performances from J.B. Smoove.
Oh, I love him.
And the great Monique, who we haven't seen in a long time, pretty much disappeared after she won her Oscar, but she steals this film. She's worth getting through all the sappy stuff to get to her.
So it's kind of like a black Love the Coopers.
But far superior Love the Coopers.
Did you review that for Weird Movie Geeks?
I did. I think I gave it 3 or 3.5 or something like that.
I've been out of the loop because I didn't even know what that was.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Arrival was number 4. We saw Arrival. Did you see Arrival? In?
Yes, I did.
It got really good reviews, which kind of surprised me. And I'm surprised it's doing as well. Is this just week 2 for Arrival?
I think so.
Yes. I've had more people ask me about that movie than anything out right now.
I'm a little surprised it's doing well. I thought it was going to be kind of a bomb.
Well, because it's so cerebral.
But I guess it was probably in the top 4 last week, and then and then you say
it's number 4 this week.
It is number 4 again, so that's it's holding strong. I guess it's found its audience.
People love Amy Adams.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about her new movie here in a few minutes. Trolls is number 3. That's a kids movie which we didn't see. Although I think Kate saw it for our side.
Yeah. Now, did she?
I think she saw
Storks.
No, I think she did. Oh, was maybe she? I get those two mixed up.
Okay. Yeah.
They're the same movie.
Doctor Strange was number 2. I saw Doctor Strange Saturday night.
Oh, you did?
What'd you think? It's wonderful.
It was one of the sillier superhero movies I've seen.
But it's fun.
It's fun. It's average for a superhero movie.
I loved it.
Yeah. Number 1 was Fantastic Beasts and Where to Hide Them. I mean, Find Them.
Yes. And well, they're hidden. You got to find them.
Okay. I didn't see that either. Like I've been a little out of the loop. But you guys saw it. Did you review that?
Yes, I reviewed that.
How many stars did you give that? I gave it
3.5 or something like that.
3.5, right? Okay, well, good. Yeah, that made $75 million to make number 1. But Doctor Strange only made $17 million, so Fantastic Beasts was way out ahead.
But Strange has been out for 3 weekends.
True.
Yeah. Right, and people are craving Harry Potter, connections.
Yeah, all right, well, let's get going. Why don't we go ahead and start with Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. You saw that?
Yes.
And Jim saw that. Yes. All right.
This is related to Grindelwald's attacks in Europe. This could mean war.
We got a plan, right, guys?
They need our help.
Who wants to start talking about this Fantastic Beasts movie?
I could probably do that since I reviewed it there. I believe it's from David Yates, who directed the last few Harry Potters.
Last four
Harry Potters. Now, this doesn't feature Harry Potter. This is set in the world of Harry Potter. As I understand that,
does it feature Dumbledore?
They mention him.
Oh, okay.
Right.
But Fantastic Beasts is one of the textbooks at Hogwarts.
Right.
And this is all about the fellow that wrote Fantastic Beasts. His name is Newt Scamander, and he is played by Oscar winner Eddie Redmayne. And it's set in 1926, mostly set in America, surprisingly, in New York City. And it's about Newt traveling to New York City to do research for his book. And, of course, he's got a little traveling case full of little beasties. He opens this up. It's kind of like Doctor Who's telephone booth, police box. You go in there, and it's acres of room and all that. And he's got a full zoo in his little traveling case. And he meets up with Dan Fogler, who's got a scene-stealing performance in it, as Jake Kowalski, and he has the same kind of suitcase. So guess what? They mix them up, and they get the wrong case. And of course, some of the beasts get out, and Newt has to find it. Also, there's a creature or something called a Grindelwald that's wrecking havoc. And in 1926, people are kind of aware that there are magic people around, that there are wizards and witches and all that. And there's sort of an uneasy truce between them. There's something called the Magic or the Magical Congress that's sort of making sure that witches don't get out of hand, and they try to hide a lot of what's going on from the public. And there's an anti-witch sort of faction, sort of like these street corner prophets.
Right.
Yeah, that's led by Samantha Morton and her son Ezra Miller in it. And there's sort of the villains in it. Also, Colin Farrell is in it as one of the policemen, the magic policeman, I guess, that works with the Magical Congress. Also, Catherine Waterston is the female lead in it, and she's part of that police force too, and she's got a delightful sister named Queenie, and I forgot to write down the actress's name.
It's Isabel Sudol.
Sudol, yes.
No, Allison Sudol.
Allison
Sudol.
Okay. And the CGI creatures are cute. I'm sure that they're going to be filling the toy store shelves. There's a stealing platypus that's pretty entertaining. But, I probably like this a little more than the Potter films, but I have to admit, the Potter films just don't do a thing for me. I can take them or leave them. Yeah, I just don't.
Are you a communist?
I'm a muggle, I guess. I just don't, I don't care about Harry and his pals, but this is okay.
Either. Those things always put me right to sleep.
Yeah, this is probably about 20 minutes too long. Yeah. There's one too many sequences of buildings being destroyed by these things. And, but the thing is, in this film, the witches the wizards come in right in with their wands and then repair all the buildings, so all the destruction is overlooked by the muggles.
All right, what do you think, Liam?
I gave it 3 of 4 stars. Okay. I did not read the Potter book, so stone me now. But
I saw
many of the films, but not all. And I do like that universe. I like what J.K. Rowling did. By the way, this is her first screenplay. She never did a Potter adaptation, but this is a book from 2001, and it takes place 70 years before Harry's at Hogwarts.
Is that right?
Yes. So there's going to be 5 total Fantastic Beasts. So this is the first one.
Assuming this first one makes any money.
Well, it has already.
But I found it charming and delightful, as a person that is not familiar with that universe. And I thought the creatures were very well done, and it looks fantastic. It's 1920s jazz age New York, and so plus it has a really good cast. But the beasts steal the show; they definitely do. Right. And Fogler is a Tony.
All right, so Lynn finds it Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them charming and delightful. Jim, how many stars you say you gave it?
I think I might have given it 3.
All right, Jim gave it 3 out of 5. Yeah. Not so charming and delightful for Jim, but he didn't hate it, it sounds
like. Yeah, it could use a trimming.
All right, let's move on. Loving.
Yes.
You realize this case could alter the Constitution of the United States.
You think you'll lose?
We may lose the small battles, but win the big war.
Well, that's their names, too.
Oh, is that what it comes from? Yes, I did not see this one either, but you guys both saw it.
Yes. One of the best films of the year.
One of the best films of the year, says Lynn. What's so great about this movie, Loving?
Okay, it's about Richard and Mildred Loving. They are an interracial couple in Virginia in 1958, and they marry, and it's against the law in Virginia, so they get sentenced to prison, and they're harassed, and it's awful, and they have to move to D.C.
How much time did they serve in prison?
Well, that's the thing. They had to get married in D.C., and then they came back to Virginia.
Right.
And then the Virginia police found out about it, but they didn't.
They ran in and arrested them?
Well, they were arrested. I think he spent the night in jail. She had to spend the whole weekend because they wouldn't allow him to bail her out. They said the judge has to see her family bail her out. Oh. And the judge says, well, you know, I'll tell you what, I could sentence you to prison for, you know, 4 or 5 years or maybe 10. But instead, if you will leave the state of Virginia and never return for 25 years, you will avoid prison time. It's ridiculous.
It is. And this is based on the true story.
This took place in the 50s?
It takes a while because the burgeoning civil rights movement, because they're living in inner city D.C., but she wants to bring the kids back to the country where she grew up, you know, because they're both country folk.
Mm-hmm.
And
they
they're
like
just
the
decent, hardworking. He's a hardworking laborer.
So is this a courtroom drama?
Yeah. Well, no. Really? It's about their lives. It's very subtle. It's very Jeff Nichols. Who directed Mud and also Midnight Special. This is he wrote and directed it. And it's about the quiet dignity of people that are just hardworking, decent hardworking, decent couple.
Who's this actress that plays Miss
Ruth Negga.
Seen her in anything?
She's on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
She's done a lot of TV work. Preacher on AMC. Right. She was unfortunately in Warcraft earlier this year.
I didn't see that.
Lucky you.
But she's going to get nominated. And Joel Edgerton, who is a favorite of Jeff Nichols, and he's fabulous, too. What happens is it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, and there was that landmark ruling in 1967 that got rid of the last segregation-based marriage laws, so that made it illegal. You know, black and whites could get married, and so that's what it's all about. And it's just a wonderfully told story.
Now, Jeff Nichols's favorite actor, Michael Shannon, has a nice little cameo in it as the Life magazine photographer that takes some photos of the Lovings in their home. And the real surprise in this film is comedian Nick Kroll, who you might know from his Comedy Central TV show, and he's done a couple of movies this year. He's in the upcoming Sing. He had a prominent voice in Sausage Party, but he plays a young, sort of wet behind the ears lawyer for the ACLU. Actually, Ruth Negga's character, Mildred, sends a letter to Bobby Kennedy once JFK is in office to look into this, and he says, well, I can't really do anything about this, but since it's a state issue, but I'm going to send this letter to the ACLU. And Kroll is the eager young lawyer, and he's very good at it. Everyone's terrific. One of the year's best films.
Definitely. Sounds like you guys were loving. Let's move on, though. We got 9 movies to review, so we're going to have to move on. So Jim and Lynn both highly recommend Loving. Let's move on. How about, do you guys highly recommend Billy Lynn's Halftime
No.
Walk?
We do the opposite of that. Okay. Highly recommend. No. We say avoid at all costs.
Okay. It's pointless.
What you did that day no longer belongs to you. It's America's story now.
Ang Lee, who has won 2 Oscars for directing pictures that did not win Best Picture. He's a great director. His last film was Life of Pi, wasn't it?
What did I say the other night, Lynn? I said a swing and a miss for Ang Lee, another sports metaphor, since this is primarily in the world of sports, but it's also in the world of military, set in 2004.
I can't figure out what it's about by the trailer.
Yeah, it's set, part of it is set, it's Iraq, I guess, in 2004.
And there's battle scenes and stuff?
There's some battle scenes. It's a Billy Lynn.
Are they as
himself.
Gruesome as the ones in Hacksaw Ridge?
No. He's played by Joel Alwyn, and he's part of a troop that is under siege or attacked. And somehow Billy's defense of one of his fallen comrades is caught on a cell phone camera, and of course this goes viral and goes around the world. So they are flown in for Thanksgiving and taken to the big, I guess every year the Dallas Cowboys play on Thanksgiving Day, the big halftime show. They're going to be part of it there. And the film is pretty much about Billy and the soldiers, and Billy flashes back to what happened at, you know, overseas, and the soldier he tries to rescue is played by Vin Diesel in a very uncharacteristic role. We're used to seeing him as the incredible, you know, unbreakable superhero, but not the case in this one. And it's about these guys dealing with all the media circus around them. They've got their own agent, played by Chris Tucker, of all people, who's trying to get a movie deal for them on Thanksgiving Day. They meet up with he's supposed to be the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, played by Steve Martin, in a really strange bit of casting, which is very odd. Of course, Billy falls for one of the cheerleaders.
Did he have a fake arrow through his head?
No, he didn't. That might have made it a little more amusing to watch, I suppose. But it's just so ludicrous that you're just wondering if this is some sort of fever dream. Kristen Stewart is in it, playing Billy's sister, who's urging him to drop out of the military, to not go back.
Does she sing "Billy, Don't Be a Hero"?
No, that would have been good.
Yeah. Well, the halftime sequence is ridiculous because they're supposed to be on stage with Destiny's Child, so of course they couldn't get Beyonce. So everything's shot with fake people from the back.
Yeah, we remind
kind of fake herself though.
Well, no. She's 100% real. Thank heaven for her. She would have made this movie a lot better. But it's kind of like, you know, the scenes with we compared it to the scenes of Jesus in the original Ben Hur from 59 with Charlton Heston. Except, you know, instead of seeing Jesus' hands or whatever, you're seeing, you know, Beyonce's derriere for most of the time. But
there's just so many better Gulf War movies. I don't understand the point of this all, because it's just not a good film. And then he shot it in super high def, but only L.A. and New York are getting that one. We got the 2D.
I heard that's more annoying than...
Well, it was kind of annoying in that Hobbit film, and that wasn't as high a frame rate as this Billy is, I guess. But yeah, and one of the things that annoyed me, I don't know if we talked about it, Lynn, was a lot of the times, like, they'll have Chris Tucker and Steve Martin looking directly in the camera, giving their lines. And I guess maybe that works in that high def rate, but here it just feels stilted and strange. And it's... What a weird film.
Oh, it could have been cut at least a half hour.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
Bravo Company is led by Garrett Hudlin, and he's actually good. You know,
good.
The people in Bravo Company are good, but it's just there's no point to this film.
Let's move on.
Oh.
Sounds like you guys don't really recommend Billy Lynn's Halftime Walk. All right, so we'll be back next week to review some new movies. Tonight, I'm seeing Bad Santa 2, which is directed by Waters. The guy who did Mean Girls.
Oh, Daniel Waters?
Is that his name?
I think so.
But the first one was directed by Terry Zwigoff, and that was in 2003. You know, Terry Zwigoff hasn't directed a movie since Ghost World. What happened to that guy?
I don't know. Ghost World's a great movie.
Oh, he made three or four fantastic movies, including Crumb.
Crumb's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Bad Santa, the first one, was...
And Art School. Art School Confidential was his last film.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say Ghost World was in 2000,
I don't know. So Dan Waters is directing. I don't know what to think. I really like the first Bad Santa. So we'll be back next week, and we'll talk about a review. And look for my review of Bad Santa. And then you guys are seeing something this afternoon?
Well, we're going to see Miss Sloan at 2 or 4.
Four.
And then I'm going to go see Hidden Figures. I'm not exactly sure when that opens up. But tomorrow night I'll be seeing Moana. We will be seeing Moana. And that opens this coming Tuesday.
Tomorrow afternoon, we're seeing Fences. Tomorrow morning, we're seeing Patriots Day.
Right.
So we have a lot of stuff to talk about next week.
Patriots Day opens January 13th, and Fences is Christmas Day. Well, and Denzel Washington directed it.
Is this his first film as a director?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Looking for him. I like Mr. Washington.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff going on locally over the weekend. Our friends over at... Destroy the Brain did their midnight show, Late Night Grindhouse, and they did Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. But since Fantastic Beasts was showing over at the Moolah, that didn't end until like 12:30. They couldn't start Henry till like almost 1 a.m.
So
I didn't bother going to that. But next month they're showing Jack Frost. They always do a Christmas-themed horror film. They've done Black Christmas and Silent Night, Deadly Night. Jack Frost went straight to video, which is kind of unusual. for Late Night Grindhouse in 1997. It's about a haunted killer snowman or something.
But that's not the one with Michael Keaton.
No, that was also called Jack Frost. You're right.
Snowman.
That was kind of a kids movie.
Yeah, but scary nonetheless. Yeah.
You think we're going to get to see The Founder?
Hopefully this month, so we'll see. Although we're not going to get that in theaters till I guess the middle of January here in St. Louis, so there you go.
And let's see what else is going on locally. Next Thursday, they're showing the original Die Hard.
Who are you, then?
Just a fly in the ointment, Hans. The monkey in the wrench. The pain in the ass.
Over at Schlafly Bottle Works, it's part of the A-Film series that I host, and that's 7 o'clock.
The perfect
December
Christmas
1st.
Film.
It is. They're also showing that at midnight at the High Point, the weekend of Christmas.
Oh, my.
Like Christmas. I guess it's the Friday the 23rd they're showing.
Not going to show that with Gremlins, are they? No. The anti-Christmas double feature.
That would be fun.
And Lethal Weapon.
But I'm looking forward to seeing Die Hard again on the big screen. And then my show, which is called 16mm Double Feature Night. Usually it's called 16mm Double Feature Night, but I'm not actually taking out the double feature this month because I'm not showing a double feature. I am showing a triple feature of TV shows. I'm showing the Brady Bunch episode, Kitty Carryall is Missing. That's a first season episode where something happens to Cindy's doll. And I think, doesn't she blame Bobby for stealing it or something?
Something like that. It's too bad you don't have one of the Vincent Price Hawaiian ones.
Yeah. It was the only episode that Roger had. And then we're showing Beverly Hillbillies episode, Granny Learns to Drive. And you know who plays her driver's ed instructor in that film?
I was about to say Louis Nye, but he played Sonny Drysdale. But, I don't know.
Mel Blanc.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he shows up as a cab driver in a couple of Beverly Hillbillies episodes.
Yeah, and then we're showing the Johnny Sacco and his giant robot episode, Opticon Must Die. Remember Johnny Sacco, Lou?
Oh, and his flying robot.
I do. Yeah. I do.
Flying robot!
Johnny Sacco fought some of the trippiest monsters. I mean, Ultraman, he's kind of a contemporary of Ultraman. Ultraman fought more conventional monsters. They had really weird monsters in Johnny Sacco, including this episode that I'll be showing, which is a giant flying eyeball.
Well, wasn't Ultraman actually produced by the Godzilla people? So they were able to get the slicker monsters. Yeah,
Godzilla shows up in an Ultraman episode. Although they put like an extra fin on him, so he looked a little different. But, they would actually recycle some of the costumes from the Toho monster stuff for Ultraman. I don't think they did that for Johnny Sacco.
I practically see the zippers on some of them.
They had a giant mummy. They had a giant Dracula. They had a giant flying hand on Johnny Sacco. So that's a weird show. But that'll be my show, 16mm Movie Night, and that is December 6th, which is a Tuesday night. And then after I show those triple feature TV shows, I'll be showing a terrific Clint Eastwood Western called Joe Kidd. That's the one where he drives the train through the saloon at the Robert Duvall and John Saxon. That's really good. And I know that the print that Roger got of Joe Kidd looks fantastic. I actually saw some screenshots of it. So the color is superb. So check that out. Starts at 8 o'clock. What else is going on locally? We can talk a little bit about Slip. Yeah. That's kind of why we weren't here the past couple of weeks, is because Slip. I always get buried in Sliff, and I know you guys do too. WeirdMovieGeeks.com posted 46 articles about the St. Louis International Film Festival, which is not only more than any other local media source. I'm pretty sure it's more than every other local media source combined.
I always
clear my calendar. We did, 46 reviews, articles, interviews to cover the St. Louis International Film Festival. I thought it was a great St. Louis International.
I did too.
Yeah.
This year. Unlike Calvin Wilson, who said it was terrible. I got to meet Karen Allen. You guys did.
I had two different functions last weekend.
Yeah,
she was delightful.
Yes.
She was great.
I got to interview her too. Just down to earth and just very wonderful to talk to. She's from Carrollton, Illinois.
She's exactly who you'd want her to be, I guess, huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd hope to see her in a movie. She says, I bet she's really nice. And it turns out she is.
She used to spend every summer here visiting her grandparents.
Goodness.
Yeah, that's what she said in the interview.
Yeah, it was so nice that she made it to the finale party. That was great.
She was a Jackie because I talked to her in the lobby.
Oh, yeah? How was Jackie?
Oh, I loved it. Natalie Portman, definite nominee.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I also got to interview Rutger Hauer, who's one of my favorite actors. He did not come to town. He was actually in Italy when I interviewed him. But he was co-starring in a movie called Drawing Home, which played. It was a pretty good movie. But I saw a lot of movies. I really liked L, which is Paul Verhoeven's new film. Speaking of Rutger Hauer, who got a start in Paul Verhoeven films back in Holland. L was fantastic, but that was at the same time as Jackie, so you had to make a choice. But you actually saw something else.
Yeah, I saw The Tower, which is a documentary about the 1966 Charles Whitman sniper at University of Texas. And it's shot in a very interesting way. If you happen to see, I think it was Waking Life, and a couple of other films have used this technique, Scanner Darkly, I think Licklider used it for that, of filming people and then running them through sort of a filter app on your computer and turning them into animated characters. It's sort of a modern version of the rotoscoping technique that was instituted in the 20s and 30s. And it gives it a really surreal look. And this is a very, very interesting film. You see these younger versions of the people running around in 66. And at the very end, you get to see the surviving people that are sort of telling their stories. It's very powerful. Mm. It's a terrific film. I believe it's going to play Webster at the end of December. So we'll try to remember to mention that right before it plays. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah. I liked Elle quite a bit. That was Paul Verhoeven's film, and it stars Isabelle Huppert.
Yeah.
And she plays a woman, a 50-year-old woman, even though the actress, I think, is much older than that, who's raped in the opening scene. It's a very rapey movie. You experience this rape over and over. Her, she fantasizes about the rape. She relives the rape. The guy comes back and rapes her again. If you're offended by rape, but Paul Verhoeven has always put a lot of rape in his film, in his films. This first movie he's made since Black Box 10 years ago, and it's really, really good. It's pretty compelling stuff, all the rape.
Well, it sounds like Miss 45 or something, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, in some ways it is. There's a lot of, sort of exploitation elements to this film. It's not really an art film.
We all served on the St. Louis Film Critics Awards, the Joe Williams Award for Documentary and the Joe Pollack Award for Narrative. And yours was highly recommended by you, The Celestial Camel.
Yeah, I was a big fan of that, and that got four. Well, we had five jurors, including Mr. Stockman here was on our jury.
I didn't care for the camel.
You were the dissenting. We heard the four out of five doctors recommend. Well, four out of five critics recommend Celestial Camel.
I liked Demi Monde. Did you see Demi Monde?
No, I didn't.
Said on this program that you were going to enjoy that. You did.
It was a true story of a murder that happened about 100 years ago over in France, and it was a story about these three women and their various power struggles ending in death. But it was kind of over the top.
Yeah, it was very operatic, I think. I
really like it.
Well, our doc jury picked A Family Affair, and it's the true story of a family from Holland who lives in South Africa, and the matriarch is a narcissistic ex-fashion model, and it takes the grandson is filming the movie, and it takes a very disturbing turn, which I can't share, but it just totally creeps you out.
All right. And what was the movie that won, like, Tim Timmerman's? Was that I think there was some local connections. Is that why that won? It was like the Wonder Dog last year won.
Yes.
Maybe those 2 years ago.
Eddie Sefchik from Belleville is one of the producers, I believe. Isn't it something about election? Timmerman.
Yeah, school election, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. I don't know anything about it. Neither of you guys saw it.
Yeah, I did see a great documentary called Last Laugh, which I recommend if you get a chance to see Mel Brooks. It's about whether or not you can make jokes about the Holocaust, and some people disagree. A lot of them agree. And it's very fast. They even talked to Robert Clary from Hogan's Heroes. I spent a lot of time with him, too. So
interesting.
Very interesting film.
All right. Well, that was Sliff. We always have a good time at Sliff, and there'll be another Sliff next year.
Oh, definitely.
This morning, breaking news, Werenberg got sold to a Milwaukee theater chain called Marcus Theaters.
But does that mean they're going to get rid of the Werenberg theme song?
Oh, no.
I hope not. Oh, my gosh. They can still call it Werenberg?
We have to campaign for that.
Yeah. All right. Let's say goodbye to a couple of people. Lupita Tovar. She starred in the Spanish language version of Dracula that was filmed on the set of Dracula in 1931.
Yeah.
She died at the too young age of 106. Good grief.
Oh,
do you know that she was the grandmother of Chris and Paul Weitz?
I did not realize
that. She was married to Pancho Conner, who was a very, very famous Hollywood agent. He was actually Charles Bronson's agent in the 1970s. But Lupita Tovar, she had a sort of a pretty minor connection to the Universal horror classics, but so few of those people are still alive. Yeah. I think it's worth noting when one of them passes.
Yeah, I saw a photo of her posted of her working with Buster Keaton in the 30s, for goodness sakes.
She played Eva in the Spanish language version, which would have been the equivalent of Helen Chandler's Mina Harker.
But she wears much more revealing outfits than Helen Chandler. My goodness.
It's really a more cinematically directed film than Todd Browning's film.
The
camera is a lot more dynamic in the Spanish language version. It's a really interesting to watch those back-to-back. In fact, they showed them back-to-back at a Fathom event last year.
And she actually bites somebody. I think she bites the fellow playing her fiancé in it. So it's very fun.
It's crazy. Yeah. So R.I.P. Lupita Tovar, R.I.P. Robert Vaughn, the last of the Magnificent Seven, passed away.
Oh, my goodness. He was the very last. Huh?
Yeah. Wow.
Horst had passed a while ago, I guess. Huh?
Actually, Horst Buchholz, Brad Dexter, Charles Bronson, and James Coburn all died within a year of each other. In 03. And then Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen both died in 1990. So Robert Vaughn was the only one. I think it was my show when I had a show on 1380 AM.
Sam Maroney was
in here, and we were talking about meeting celebrities.
I remember this.
I think Donnie Blake asked, who was the rudest celebrity you ever met? And I had to say Robert Vaughn. What a grumpus that guy was. I met him a couple of times, and here's $25 to sign my man from Uncle Entrox. Signed it and sneered and kind of threw it at me. I never could figure out what was up with that guy.
Wow!
But anybody who's met him will tell you that exact same story. So, but that's okay. He was in a lot of great movies, and The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Caveman, for goodness sakes.
So he had a terrific career. So R.I.P. to him, despite his grumpiness. But we've got to sign off. We got to wrap this up. Doggone it. We'll be back next week though, and we'll review a bunch of other stuff. I don't know what, but for now, I'm Tom Stockman,
Jim Batts,
Lynn Venhouse,
and be sure to listen again next week.
Black leather, crash, 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 black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward in the battle, there, chaps.
Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, smash, smash, smash.